Before a couple gets married, they have to first get engaged. The Gemara says that it's forbidden to elope. Rav Mangan Amanda Mekadesh Belo Shiduche. Rav used to be Makas Mardis. If a couple would just meet and get married just like this, they have to first get engaged. So the minig was for many generations that people would make tenoyim. The tenoyim was always a big issue discussed by the Rambam and the Tosfos, Chachmei Sfar, Chachmei Ashkenaz. It was a universal practice, very strange, that posed the problem of asmat alokanya. If the couple are so madly in love with each other that they can't visualize ever breaking up, so of course they're going to say, if I back out, if I don't marry you within the next 6 months, I'll pay you $100,000 for backing out penalty. They're madly in love. They made his chayvus halatzai thinking that it's never going to happen. So that's the kasha that Tosfos and the Rambam and all the Rishonim discuss. How is tenoyim legally binding? You should really declare that it's asmachta lokanim. So they give different explanations as to why they think that the tenoyim is legally binding. The Pesachei Tshuva and Ebenezer comments on the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that there's a cherem hakadmonim, that once you make tenoyim, there's an iser, there's a cherem from the days of the gonim that you're not allowed to back out from the engagement. It's considered a serious issue. So the Pesachei Tshuva quotes in the name of the Vilna Goyen that rather than back out from the tenoyim, it would be better to get married and give a get. Some people do that. Some people who got engaged, usually by chassidim, usually not by mishnayim, usually chassidim do that. It doesn't mean you make the whole wedding when you invite 5,000 guests. You just give a ring and say, hariyam kodeshisli, then you give a get right away. So that's why many recommend that you shouldn't make tenoyim. What do you have to look for trouble for? Don't make an official tenoyim. So you don't have to get involved in all of these issues. Certainly it doesn't make sense to make tenoyim at the wedding. What are you making tenoyim? They're going to get married in another half hour. So what are you making tenoyim for? So some chassidim insist, no, you got to have tenoyim because hamakadosh below shiduchi. Yeah, but they're engaged for a couple of months already. That's the shiduchi. Doesn't necessarily have to be tenoyim. So the different practices, some insist on having tenoyim, some don't. It really doesn't make sense to have a tenoyim at the wedding at all. So that's where Rav Moshe Feinstein reworded the whole text of the tenoyim. So many people use Rav Moshe. It's not really a tenoyim. It's a shaver. That's what they showed it to Rav Soloveitchik the first time he saw it. So he was surprised. So he said, that's not a tenoyim, that's a shaver. The document just says, it's a receipt. It says that the chosen's father and the kalah's father both are prepared to make a public statement that the other tzad doesn't owe them any outstanding debt. That whatever expenses they had at the engagement party or until the wedding, until the night of the wedding, so far there are no outstanding obligations. So it's like a hedor's bavin, that no one owes anybody else any money. Setting the wedding is minhagim and shulchan aruch, is it permissible to be makbid about getting married in the first half of the month? It doesn't say you have to get married the first half of the month. It's a machlekes. Many people had such a practice. It's a siman tov. The moon is getting bigger and bigger. So this is a siman bracha that their love for each other should grow and grow. So some rishonim said it's forbidden to be medaktik about getting married to the sacheresh because of the prohibition of lo senachshu v'lo se'oneinu. Ona means man. You're going to assume that certain times of the month are more lucky than other times of the month. That's a violation of lo se'oneinu. So we're mekel on that. The Shulchan Aruch says it is permissible to try to set the wedding date at the beginning of the month. There's a siman bracha. The Gemara says there are things that we do that are not in violation of lose of nichush because we don't do it. It's not that we really think the marriage will last better if you get married the first half of the month as opposed to the second half of the month. It's just it's a nice siman bracha. It would make a difference if the bride is going to wear a white gown, or they're going to have white tablecloth, or they're going to have blue tablecloth and a blue marriage gown. It's a siman of purity. It's a symbol of purity. It's a siman. A siman is not a violation of lois anachshu v'lo sonein. So we pass on that it's permissible to choose, but if it's difficult, so you don't get excited about that. When you choose a place that you're going to get married, so the in the encyclopedia that's entitled that's called Sdei Chemed, that's an encyclopedia that was written in the 1900s. The author was a Sephardi who was born in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Hebron, and then he took a Rabbonis in Russia. And the Minhagim were all different from what he was used to, so he used to correspond with all the Rabbonim from Europe to ascertain what the Minhagim are supposed to be. And that's what prompted him to start writing this encyclopedia. And he has other things in the encyclopedia that don't have to do with the issue of the Minhagim and his little community. So in the Sechemen, he quotes the correspondence and the Tshuvas from the Achrayim a lot about this topic of the getting married in the shul. That in the early, in the middle 1800s, the minig in Eastern Europe was that by the Ashkenazim, they never got married in a shul. Only the Christians would get married in a church because it was one of the seven sacraments. And the Reform, when the Reform movement began in the early 1800s, they introduced it to get married in a shul in order to imitate the ways of the Christians. So some sefer said that that's an ischukasakum, to insist on getting married in a shul, to imitate the ways of the goyim, is a prohibition of chukasak. The question is, what about now? It's not, let's say, there are wedding halls on Long Island which are less expensive than other halls. They're nice places. If you want to get married in a synagogue, you're not interested in imitating the ways of the goyim. It's just that it's less expensive over there. Is it really such an issa? So many poskim say, yeah, it's an issa. Forget about the chukasakum. It's an issa because of the bizoyan beis haknesses. The beis haknesses is only supposed to be used for davening and for learning Torah, not supposed to be used for other things, even though getting married is a mitzvah. Some poskim say that this too constitutes a violation of covet beis haknesses. Not supposed to use beis haknesses for things other than Torah tefillah. So that's a concern. That's a concern. That's why some rabbanim will always stay away from Rabbi Lifshitz, for example, would never attend a wedding, even his closest talmidim. Whenever the wedding was in a shul, he wouldn't go. Rabbi Soloveitchik would try to avoid it, but if it was someone close to him, he wouldn't even mention a word. He would just go to the wedding and he wouldn't hurt their feelings. He would try to avoid going attending weddings in the shul. When you send out wedding invitations, so usually you have one side in Hebrew, one side in English. I just got a wedding invitation recently. I only had a Hebrew from America. I'm very surprised. I only had a Hebrew invitation, nothing in the English. That's why I forgot all about the wedding. I didn't go. Sunday night, yeah. Yeah.
Primarily concerned
with Rabbi
Soloveitchik or
Rabbi Lifshitz, I don't know. Rabbi Soloveitchik was concerned about Bizoyin Beis HaKnesses. He thought that you're not allowed to have a bris in the shul either. He thought that the reason why we have a bris in the shul is because it's right after the davening, so it's a tircha to be matriach everybody to go gather together to go to another place. Well, let's say you're going to have a scheduled bris for later on in the day, right? Not immediately following Shacharis. You thought you're not allowed to use the shul to have a bris meal either. The shul may not be used for anything other than davening and limud haTorah, unless it's Torchei Rabim. Torchei Rabim will make them. He thought it was a bizoyin beis haknesses. By the Hungarians, this was real serious. By the Hungarians, the Talmid Chacham Sofer, they were upset about the chukasakum, because they lived at the beginning of the Reform movement, so they considered this a serious issue.
Some people nowadays started having
chukas
in the conservative
shul. Moshe Feinstein writes that the conservative synagogue with a daven mix, it doesn't really have a kedushas beis haknesses. They really don't have. So it's not that serious a problem of bizoyin beis haknesses. You're doing something with their beis haknesses that's much nicer than what they usually do. You're having a wedding, that's nicer than that. Moshe writes like that in one of his tshuvas. He deals with the other issue. If you're going to have a wedding in a conservative temple, does it really imply that you're giving a stamp of approval to the temple? Most of the time it does not imply anything. It means that it's less expensive there than in the Statler Hilton. And that's what doesn't really imply anything. So the Pashto, that's how Moshe writes. If it's a conservative place where they daven mixed together, men and women together, so he says he doesn't think that you're violating Kedushas Beis HaKnesses by having a wedding in the conservative temple. So that is, if you have a wedding invitation, what kind of script should you use? So in the Igros Sofer, the Chasam Sofer's family used to have a practice based on the Sefer Hasidim that they would never throw out letters. They would take all the letters. So they used to stuff the attic with all the letters. until the fire department came, and they said they better take out all those letters. Are they gonna declare the whole house as a fire hazard, and they won't allow them to live in the house. So then they had to decide which letters they're going to keep and which letters they're going to throw out. So when they were throwing out all the letters, so some of the members of the family grabbed a whole bunch of letters that they thought were of value, and then they printed some of them. These are called Igra Sefer, the letters of the Schreiber family, the Sefer family. So they have an Igra Sefer. They write very fascinating things. That's where they have all the letters about the Ablebele Eger was the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger was a misnaget, and he had a son-in-law. Nebuchadnezzar he suffered, he had a son-in-law who was a chassid. The Nesivus also was a big misnaget. He also suffered, he had a son-in-law who was a chassid, a big chassid. So then Rabbi Akiva Eger really suffered. He was punished Min HaShemayim. He had a grandson who was a real chassidish Rebbe, Ablebele Eger, really a chassidish Rebbe, the whole works. So he used to correspond with his uncle, the chassidish uncle, Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum, to ask him, tell me stories about the grandfather. They have a lot of things from the Igra Sefer in the letters there that we don't know from any other source about Rabbi Kivega. Like Rabbi Moshe has the practice when you attend the bris, so you say Bar Pi Agof, and then you say Ashikidish you did in bet, and you say Koras HaBris, and then you say Alkem Hatena Kayemis Ariel Ozav Yavav Lima Koresh Mal Bris, and so on. Rabbi Moshe says you should do like Rabbi Kivega did, that you drink the wine right after Koras HaBris. You shouldn't wait till the end. He thinks that the minute kept on changing. Every 50 years, the minute kept on changing. So he says, you're not in violation of any minute if the minute keeps on changing every 50 years. So do it the correct way. The correct way is the way Rabbi Kivega did. So how do you know Rabbi Kivega did it like that? That comes from the letters of the son-in-law that he wrote to the grandson. Shmuel Birnbaum is writing to the grandson of Label Eger, the Chassidish Rebbe, what were the practices of the grandfather. So among the collection of letters in the Igra Sefer, they have one of the letters that they're writing, that in the Schreiber family, the Chassam Sefer family, they couldn't afford to print wedding invitations. They go broke if they print wedding invitations. So they paid someone who wrote quickly. So they used to pay a person to write in Ksav Ashuris wedding invitations. There are more rites in Yeridei and Hilchas Sefer Torah Minig. This Minig stems from the days of the Rimagash. The Rama quotes this from the Rimagash. In the Tshuvas of the Rambam, that you don't use Ksav Ashuris for personal, private things. You only use it for holy purposes, because the Ksav Ashuris, that Suris Oisius, is specially reserved for Tarach. So it's not right to use it for personal things. So what about to use Ksav Ashuris for wedding invitations? So that some Sefer's practice was that he did. He paid a Sefer to send that wedding invitation Ksav Ashuris. He felt that this was a Dvar Mitzvah, so it's permissible to use. Others have an assistance for Dafka not to use Ksav Ashuris even for wedding invitation, because there are more rites in his Shalas and Chuvas that he was makdid not to print his Shalas and Chuvas in block letters, in square letters. He insisted to use only Ksav Rashi for his Shalas and Chuvas. He felt that the minhag from the days of the Rimagash was to reserve Ksav Ashuris for Tanakh. He shouldn't even use Ksav Ashuris for Gemara. Shouldn't use it for Shalas. The Gemara's are all printed like that. I don't know. He says he didn't want to use Ksav Ashuris for his, he didn't want to use even black letters to his volume of Shabbos and Tshuvas that he printed during his lifetime, because some of the black letters in the printed script are very similar, kemat identical with the Ksav Ashuris. So he was mahadir to use Rashi's script for his Shabbos and Tshuvas. So that's why some are mahadir dafke to send out wedding invitations in Rashi's script, like the Ramo was medaktik, not to use even black letters for Shabbos and Shuvot, let alone for wedding invitation. Wedding invitation is less of a bar mitzvah than Shabbos and Shuvot. All right, these are two practices. Some say his practice was bedavke to use Ksav Ashuris, and others have the minig davke not to use anything that looks like Ksav Ashuris. There's an issue of writing psukim on wedding invitations. Rav Moshe Feinstein has in his sefer, he quotes the Gemara has in Rosh Hashanah and Menachos a partial list of the various holidays that were instituted during the period in the second base on Mikdosh, that they're called Megillah's Tainus holidays. So one of those holidays was, and they all have a historical background, what happened that they declared it as a holiday. So on one occasion, the background seems to be that before the Hashmonaim were victorious against the Yevanim didn't allow the Jews to mention Shem Shamayim. They weren't even allowed to say the name of God. So after the Hashmonaim were victorious, the Jews were so excited that now finally, after so many years of oppression, they can mention Shem Shemayim. So they were saying Shem Shemayim all over the place. So they put it into every shtar. When they would write a document that said that I owe you 25 cents, $25, whatever it is, so they would write the date. So the practice then, they didn't have the practice of writing how many years it is since Briyas HaOlam. That's a later practice, came in way later. So in their days, they used to write how many years it is since Hakamas HaMedina, or how many years it is since the Kohen Gadol is serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So they write how many years it is since so-and-so is the Kohen Gadol, and they would add on, Hu Kohen L'Kel Elyon. They would put in Shem Hashem, Kel Elyon. So the Tanoim were not happy about that. This was the reaction of the masses. After so many years of not being allowed to mention Shem Shemayim, so they were so excited that now they have... Now the Yvonim are not on top of them anymore, so now they're free to mention Shem Shemayim, so they put it all over. The Rabbonim are not happy, because what's going to be after he pays up the money, then the Malva is going to return the shtar to the Lover, the Lover is going to rip it up and throw it in the garbage with the Shem Shemayim. And then says Shem Shemayim mutal ba'ashpa. So the Tanoim kept on encouraging the people that they should stop this practice, and when the people finally listened and they succeeded in abolishing this practice that they thought was highly improper, so they made a yontif. That was one of the amitim that they established when bitlu atkarta mishtaraya, and they omevatl haskara shem shemayim from the shtaris. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says we have this problem. A lot of people send out wedding invitations and they write psukim all over the place. So he says it's not right. You're not supposed to throw it in the garbage. So every time you get a wedding invitation, you have to rip off all the psukim and put them in the shemus. He says, it's better not to put any psukim at all. Why should you put psukim on the wedding invitation? A person wants to write a pasuk, so you should distort it in such a way that you'll know what you're alluding to, but you won't have a direct quotation from the Tanakh.
Did you get me up with photocopies and even newspaper pictures of things which are good? Or even photocopies that
the pashtus is that you should be medactic to put all these things in Shemus. There is an argument. One could build up a whole argument to explain why there's room to be mekal on Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh, that's not Oymed Lelimud, so there's room to be mekal. But the pashtus is that it's not right. You really should put all these things in Shemus. Tons of Shemus, yeah.
Some people change the pasuk of Obi Shama to the bracha of the hero.
Yeah, so at least it's not the direct quotation from the pasuk. Moshe is not happy about even kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kav. He says that's also a quotation from the pasuk. Other people feel, what? Everything is a quotation from the pasuk. That's already an expression. People don't even realize that that's, oh, Yisham Bar Yehuda, that we know is a pasuk. Everybody knows. Kol sasam, kol simcha, a lot of people don't even realize. That's like a design. Moshe says he doesn't think that that's right either. You shouldn't have kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kav. That's a direct quotation from the pasuk. He thinks that you're going to throw it in the garbage. It's not right.
It's all the bracha. It's the bracha. So we consider that part of a pasuk and half bracha. We consider all the bracha and not
the pasuk. I don't know. We should avoid the whole thing. The bracha is also Torah Shabbat Peh. The text of bracha is also Torah Shabbat Peh. It's not right to throw the text of the bracha in the garbage either. So the correct practice is they don't always consult you. Sometimes whoever's in charge of making the invitations, the girl's parents print the invitations, they don't consult you about it. So if you don't consult you, so don't make a fight about it. But if they do consult, so the correct thing is to avoid putting in any psukim. Who is supposed to be the Masadik Kiddushin? What is the whole story of Masadik Kiddushin? What's the whole institution? So the Maharshal, who is a cousin of the Ramo, lived in the 1500s in Europe. Marshal wrote a sefer on Gemara that's called Yamshel Shlomo. His name was Shlomo Luria. The Rosh Yeshiva is Marshal. So in the first paragraph that he has on Ksubis in the Yamshel Shlomo, he quotes from the Or Zeruah. That's one of the Rishonim. The Or Zeruah has a big chiddush that the weddings and the divorces have to take place by Yom, because you need a bezdin for a chasana and you need a bezdin for a get. And you can't make a kriyas bezin balayla. How can it be? The Gemara talks all over the place about a get balayla, about kiddushin balayla, kitcha balayla. The Gemara is all over the place. How can it be? What do you mean? Invented a new thing? It's against all of Shas. So the Vilna Goyen and Ebenezer comes to defend this Ozeruah. How can it be? He says this, all the Gemaras, all the Mishnais and all the Gemaras were in the earlier generations. There must have been a takana in a later generation that you have to have a bezdin or a dayan, the shat seder aged. Where do you find that this is in the later generations? Gemara quotes one of the later Amoraim who makes a statement, "Bisheni debet mikidushin lo yehela esik imahim." So Rashi learns Pashup Shat that the Misari Kiddushin, you have to pick a Misari Kiddushin to be a dayan on the Kiddushin, you have to pick a Misari Raget to be a dayan on the Get. That's the Rashi in the beginning of Gittin, on Davov in Gittin. Rashi writes that one is Misari to Get has the status of a dayan. So the only going comes to defend this or the root against all of Shat. How can you say Kiddushin has to be by Yom and the Gerishin has to be by Yom? So he says this was instituted in the days of the later Amoraim. In the earlier generations, it was never required. So from that time on, once they instituted like that, so the chasen is supposed to be by Yom, and the get should be by Yom. Then the later post came out on the Maramintz, I think, who was the same time as the Ramo. So he adds on that just if you need a dayan, so then the dayan can be related to the couple. So the Masada Kiddush and the Masada Get, there's not allowed to be a Karev. Yeah, you look in Shulchan Aruch, they didn't quote the whole Arzaruah. They only quote half of the Arzaruah in Hilchas Gittin. In Hilchas Kiddushin, they never quote any of this, that it has to be by Yom, and that Masada Kiddushin shouldn't be related to the boy or the girl. It's only quoted in Hilchas Gittin. So the Knesset HaGdolah was a rabbi in Constantinople, so he complains about this. He says he was appointed rabbi in Constantinople. He said they had a strange custom. They used to get married at night. So he never heard about the Alta, hey? Never heard, chasen of alayla, unheard of. So he changed the practice, and he says, how come Shulchan Aruch doesn't say? It's not a problem. Shulchan Aruch, they only quoted half of the story, and it's not right. Once they quoted the half, and the Hilchos Gittin should have quoted the whole story, that even by wedding also, you're not allowed to have the wedding at night, and mainly you're not allowed to have a korev be Masada Kiddush. Most people are not makbid. By get, most people are makbid. Most people are makbid, not to be Masada Get by Lila, unless a big shas adchak. I remember I was once talking to one of the, years ago, I was talking to one of the Dayanim from London, so he was surprised to hear that in America sometimes the Masada Gittin by Lila, I said shas adchak. He said they never had, he was in the bezin there for years and years, 30 years. He said they never had a shas adchak. I don't know, maybe the people are more relaxed in London than they are here. So you have the lunatics who will just never come by Yom to give a get. You have to get him in the middle of the night. Sometimes you have to get him at the airport as they're off to Bangladesh. They're never going to come back and they're going to leave their wives in Agudah. So you have to get him at 1 o'clock at night as they're leaving. And Acheres is going to be a Shasat Chagor. The woman will be in Agudah. So by Gittin, most are Makbid. I think they told me Ramosha was never Makbid about that. I don't know. Personally, they told me Ramosha was never Makbid about the Gittin Balayla. He used to give Lachatkhila. But most Rabbanim are medakhtik by a get, that the Masada get should not be related to the husband or the wife, and the Masada, you shouldn't do a Seder get by Laila, because it is or is a rope. By Kiddushin, most are not makbid. And if it's possible to be makbid, why not? So if the chuppah is going to be at night, so then kolakos, the Masada Kiddushin is not a dayan. So it does make a difference, the Masada Kiddushin is a relative or not. If the wedding is going to be in the daytime, so you may as well get a Masada Kiddushin, it's not related. Why not? He may as well, if you already have it by Yom, so he may as well try to be medakbek the whole way, that he shouldn't be related. Exactly what do we do when we have a wedding? So we have Erisin and we have Nisuin. These are the two parts to the marriage, and the Gemara has many differences between Erisin and Nisuin. There are many differences on the level of the Raisa, and many more differences on the level of the Rabbanan. The Gemara says on the level of the Raisa, you have a difference. Liyorsha, the Tamila, the Hafen, the Dereha. The Gemara has the Bidishim Achas. The Gemara will throw in these differences. Sheksus v'yoyna only applies after Nisun. The Shibud issues don't exist during Erisin, only after Nisun. Then you have more differences, halacha l'maisa, many differences between Erisin and Nisun. Bizmana Gemara, the practice was Bizmana Tanakh, Bizmana Gemara, till the days of the Gemara, the practice was that there would be a long pause in between Erisin and Nisun, a year, half a year. So we understand why when they had the Birchas Nisun over a cup of wine, the Rosh in the beginning of Ksuba sort of implies, and our text of the Gemara doesn't say, that they used to recite Birchas Nisun over a cup of wine. Birchas Erisin, for sure they didn't do over a cup of wine. That was instituted by the Gaonim. But the Rosh in the beginning of Ksuba on the Sugi of Sheva Brachas quotes from the Gaonim as if this was Bizmana Gemara, that if you had a cup of wine, you would recite Birchas Nisun over a cup of wine. It would alakos enhances the chshivas of the brachas. So it's understood why in the days of the Talmud, if there was such a practice, the days of the Gaon for sure, that they said bar piagofen over the cup of nisuin, because you can't rely on the bar piagofen you said before. When did you say bar piagofen before? What, by the kosher erison? A year ago. Of course there's a hesach hadas. So he went to sleep a whole year. Of course you say bar piagofen. The question came up when the Gaonim instituted that you should have the two back to back with each other. You shouldn't have a pause in between the Eris and Nisuin. We have immediately following the Kiddushin, we have the Nisuin right away. So then the Shaila came up. This is because the Gaonim were concerned that the woman is an Eish Yisrael, she may be Mezana in between and after she's up to Al Baila. You're going to have problems. So why create a situation where the girl is an Eish Yisrael and she's not living with the husband? Don't make her an Eish Yisrael till she's going to be living with the husband. So that's our practice, that they moved up. We have the Eris and the Nisuin one after the other. So then the question arose, so why do you say Bar Piagofen before you're about to recite the Brichas Nisuin? You just said Bar Piagofen before the cup of Eris. So the Hagos Maimoni quotes that in the days of Rashi, the Rabbi and the Tam, they were concerned about this, and that's why they decided to make a pause in between the Eris and the Nisuin. So how exactly do you make a pause? So sometimes you have a rabbi gives a long drasha. Some give longer drushes than others. So the best place to say the drusha is after the erison, before the bar piagofen of nisuin. If you want a chazan to sing away, so get the chazan to sing that. Or if you want to, many have the meaning that they break the glass at that time. You have a hafsaka by breaking the glass. Agos Maimoni quotes that they instituted Rashi, Rabbi and Thomas, not sure who or which one of them, somebody in that group, in that family, instituted the reading of the ksuba. Reading of the ksuba is in order to waste time in between the Eris and the Nisuin, so you have a little bit of a pause. It doesn't really farem for the kasha. Why do you say another bar piagofen? If you say a bar piagofen, then you read a ksuba for 5 minutes, then you don't say another bar piagofen at the end. The real answer probably is that since you're reciting another bracha lakos, so that requires another bar piagofen. That's questionable on Pesach night when you have the arba kosis. So the practice by the Ashkenazim is that we say Bar Piagofen four times on each one of the coasts. And the Mechaber quotes the practice of many Sfaradim, all the Sfaradim, I don't know, that they don't say Bar Piagofen on the second or the fourth coast. Because the second coast is covered with the Bar Piagofen over Kiddush, and the fourth coast of Bichas Hashir by the Seder is covered with the Bar Piagofen of the third coast of the Bichas HaMozen. There was no Hesach Hadas. Everybody knows there's going to be a second coast, everybody knows there's going to be a fourth coast. You need a bar piagofen on the third coast because he said Bichas HaMozen in between. So Bichas HaMozen constitutes a Hesach Hadas for meeting. So that's for sure you need a bar piagofen. On the first coast and on the third coast, that's not a Shaila. But in the second and the fourth is a Machlekes. So the practice by Ashkenazim is that we, Ashkenazim, say bar piagofen on all four coasts. And the Rishonim give two explanations. So one of the explanations is that each one is another Brach HaLakos. There's a Hashem Gyalonu, Bichas Amozen Alakos, and Bichas Hashir. Whenever you have a bracha alakos, you have to recite Bar Piagofen, whether you need it or not, mitam hilchas Bichas Anenin. Even if in hilchas Bichas Anenin you're covered, but still, a bracha alakos requires a Bar Piagofen. So if you say like that, then we understand what we're doing by the wedding. You say Bar Piagofen on the Koshal Nisun, even though you just said Bar Piagofen a minute ago, because this is another bracha alakos, like Arba Kaisis on Pesach night. The only thing is, it looks funny. Pesach night, at least you say a Haggadah, it takes a few minutes, so you say a little bit Haggadah Mal. You just said Bar Piagofen, it looks strange, so that's why the Rabbein Tam instituted that there should be the Ksuvah. If there would have been a problem of Brachal of Atala, there would have been a problem of how do you say Bar Piagofen at all, so the reading of the Ksuvah wouldn't solve that problem. The problem probably was the Hilchas Bichas Brachal HaKos requires that you should say another Bar Piagofen, that's okay. But it looks funny. So to make it look a little better, so you instituted you should have a shtickle pause. So that's why the meaning developed that we read the ksuba. Why did they pick on reading the ksuba from all things? Why did they have a niggin that takes 10 minutes? Why did they all introduce that the rabbi should, well, the rabbi, that's dangerous. He can talk forever. The chazan can sing forever. The ksuba has a limited text. Maybe that's why. Anyway, but why did they decide to read the ksuba? So the answer is because the Rambam and the other earlier Rishonim before the Rambam say you have to give the ksuba prior to the Nisuin. You have to give over the ksuba to the Kala before you start the Brichas Nisuin. Why? Because the Rambam, the Gemara has a suffix in the beginning of Perek Afalpi. The Mishnah says like this. Let's say the ksuba, ikka ksuba, you're only obligated to give so much money if the couple gets divorced or the husband dies, so the woman is entitled to ikka ksuba. If the husband wants to add on more, then so our practice is we add on more to sefer ksuba than the whole ksuba is worth. The ikka ksuba is peanuts. Ikka ksuba is less than $300, maybe less than $200, very little ikka ksuba. And that the sefer ksuba is worth several thousand dollars. So the Mishnah says that's okay. The Gemara says, how can you call it Tosefis? If it's Tosefis, Mubala Iker. If Tosefis is more than Iker, so the Gemara says, that's okay. Afal Bishamru, the Iker Ksuba is Masayim Zuz, and Ratzal Ahoyz and Moisiv, you can add as much as you want. So that's our practice. We add on thousands of dollars, much more, over and above the Iker Ksuba. So the Gemara has, what happens like this? A man gets married, and he gives his wife a Ksuba, and he adds on Tosefis Ksuba, $100,000. He loves her so much. He says, if I ever divorce you, I give you the right to collect $100,000. Then he gets a heart attack before they ever get a chance to go to the Ichud room. He's so excited about getting married. He gets a heart attack and he drops dead on the spot. So does she have the right to collect $100,000? He never even lived with her. What? He loves her so much, but he never even lived with her. So the Mishnah quotes Machlekes HaTanoim. And we passed him that you don't, it's an umdur in the Muchach. Even though he didn't write that Tanai on the condition that we'll live together, if he dies before they ever had a chance to have the nisuin, so it's self understood that she's not entitled to the Tosefis Ksuba. So then the Gemara has a shaila: what if they went ahead and they had the nisuin, but pirsa nida, she became a nida, and they didn't have a chance to live together? So what's the din in such a case? Is she entitled? And then he gets a heart attack, and he never actually gets to live with the wife. Is she entitled to collect the full Tosefis Ksuba? Well, you say no. The Tosefis Ksuba not only is not collectible during Erisin, it's not even collectible after Nisuin, if the husband dies after Nisuin, unless they actually live together. Pirsa Nida, and he never actually lived with his wife, so she doesn't collect the Tosefis Ksuba. So the Gemara has a topic about that. So that's the way all the normal Rishonim reading Gemara. Pirsa Nida Mahu, you have the Umdine that the husband only added the Tosefis Ksuba on the understanding that they're going to be living together, or even if they're not going to live together. The Rambam has a totally different shot than the Gemara. The Rambam with the Rimagash, the Rambam shot Pirsa Nida Mahu, doesn't go on Tosefis Ksuba with the Umdine, the Rav Lozer ben Azari's Umdine, that you're not entitled to collect the Tosefis. If he dies during Erisin, nothing to do with that. The Rambam learns the pshat in the Gemara from his Rabbeim. Can you make a Chupas Nida? What's the din Pirsa Nida Mahu? Does the halacha require Chupa Haruya Lebiya? Or does halacha not require chuppah roi labir? So the Rambam says, l'chatchila, we insist on having a chuppah roi labir. So then the Rambam quotes from the earlier Rishonim, not only did we require chuppah roi labir on the level of deraisa, that it appears a nidah, there's a nisa deraisa that can't be together, on the level of the Rabbanon there's a din, that if the kala doesn't have the ksuba, also l'adam sheyash yisishto sha'achas b'lo ksuba, they're not allowed, let's say a couple is married and he gave his wife a ksuba, and after 30, 40 years of marriage, she lost the ksuba. So they're not allowed to live together until he gives her a new ksuba. You have to give a ksuba the irkasa. Ksuba the irkasa means it got lost. So you're right. I married this girl years ago, and she tells me that she lost the ksuba. I don't know if it's true. Maybe she didn't lose the ksuba. There's a problem. You're not supposed to write two shtoris on the same obligation. If I give my wife two ksuba, she can later on, we'll get divorced, she'll collect twice. She'll collect in one bezin. Now she'll go to another bezin and collect, and I'll say, I paid ksuba already, and I won't be able to prove it. So if the person has two shtoris on the same club, so it's a danger they may collect twice. If I don't care, so good. So write two. If you don't care about paying twice, so write two shtoris, no problem. But if you do care, I'm not interested in paying twice this debt. I love you, but I don't want to pay twice ksuba. And if I have to pay once ksuba if I decide ever to divorce you. So then you got a problem. So that's why there's always a problem. When the wife says that she lost the ksuba, on the one hand, the husband says, he wants to live with his wife. So if she says she lost the ksuba, he's not allowed to live with her. So he wants his wife back. But then he's going to give her a ksuba. She may be finagling to get rid of him, and then she'll collect the ksuba twice. And he doesn't want to pay twice. So that's why we write the ksuba dirka. So we write, my wife said that she lost the ksuba. I love her. I want to give her a ksuba. I want to live with her. But I don't want to pay twice. So this is a backup, and I don't want to make sure that I don't. So he may later on fall in. She'll be a smart cookie, so she'll first collect with the ksuba dirka. Then she'll wait 5 years and she'll go to a different business, she'll collect with the original ksuba, and she'll say with a straight face, I never collected the ksub, and he can scream bloody murder and have no way to prove that he read it, unless I'll hold on to the receipt that she wrote him. Okay. So those are the, every profession, every field has its dangers, and marriage has its dangers also. So your wife may try to finagle to collect twice ksub and get rid of you. Okay. So that's why there's a din. You have to, the Rambam writes, there's a din. You have to give the ksuba to the girl before you do the nisuin. There should be a chuppah, a royal abiyah, on the level of the rabbanon. Not only does the girl have to go to mikveh before the chuppah, there should be chuppah, a royal abiyah, on the level of the raisa. The chasn has to give the ksuba to the girl before you do the chuppah, to make sure that it's a chuppah, a royal abiyah, on the level of the rabbanon. So because that was always the practice, that they handed over the ksuba prior to the performance of the nisuin, of the chuppah, so that's why when they were looking for something to cause a hefsek, so some introduced the breaking of the glass in between, and some introduced a sermon, and some introduced a chazanis. So others introduced the reading of the ksubah. Because Ben Kavakar is going to give over the ksubah. So maybe they'll say what it is. He'll spend a few minutes. He wastes a little time reading the ksubah.
Is an engagement ring considered a conditional presence?
Does he get back the ring in case they get the break up? Yeah. There are takonis from the days of the Rishonim about what's assumed to be conditional, what's not. The engagement ring goes back. Yeah. The Gemara has a discussion about the case of kiddushin. Does it go back if the in the event that they get divorced after the marriage, whether it's in Baba Basra? This discussion should have been in kiddushin, but it's not. It's in the end of Baba Basra. Whether kiddushin litivu and nitnu, is that harayin gezunkin? Does it sink in? Tovea banor. The case of kiddushin is litivu and nitnu. It sinks in. You don't get your money refunded in the event that you get divorced after the kiddushin. Or kiddushin la litivu and nitnu. So you do get it back. So that's a discussion of Shulchan Aruch, how we should pass in there. So again, so we perform the marriage in two stages. We do the erisin, we do the nitzu, and we have a little bit of a pause in between. That's why the pashtus is that the whole purpose of the reading of the ksuba is to make a pause. So some rabbis have a practice that they run through the ksuba very quickly. They rattle through the ksuba very quickly. I think I'll begin. It's not correct. The whole purpose of the ksuba is to make a hefsek. You should read it slowly. It doesn't mean you have to draw it out as long as possible. It should be read slowly to constitute a bit of a hefsek in between the two. What exactly is the nisuin? The erisin, we know there are three forms of kiddushin, kes of shtar biya. The rabbis prohibited biya. The Gemara says in the first pack in kiddushin, Rav would give makas mardis to anyone who would be mekadosh biya. The Gemara says mishum pritzusa is considered an act of pritzus. Kiddushin shtar should have been an option. But the Rambam says, the meaning is that by the Orthodox Jews they use kesef, they don't use shtar. The Pashtus, the reason probably is, because the Rambam himself writes, that kesef is Torah Shebal Peh, and shtar and biya are Torah Shemichsav. And the Karoim, the Rambam lived in the middle of all the Karoim, and he had sechsuchim, he had debates with the Karoim, he had fights with the Karoim. So the Karoim never recognized Kiddushin kesef. Today they have Karoim who came from Asia, from Africa, Eretz Yisrael is blessed with a kibbutz goliath, they have from all over the place. So none of them have kiddushi kesef. They only have kiddushi shtar and kiddushi bir, because kiddushi kesef was only known through the Torah Shebal Peh. So the pashtus is that that's what the Rambam says. Kol Yisrael kaddish b'kesef means, what do you mean the Jews do? It means Orthodox Jews, not Karaim, have chosen to use kiddushi kesef as opposed to kiddushi shtar. To demonstrate that we do subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh, there's nothing wrong with kiddushi kesef. Unlike the Karaim who don't use Kiddushin Kesef. So we know what the Kiddushin consists of. You give the Kesef. The Gemara says you got to have Amira, and it has to be Nosan Hu, Yamahu, and you have to have Shtika. If you're going to have Shtika, Lachamat Mois, that's a sort of, let's say, the Chosin is going to give the ring first. Then you're going to say Hariat Mekudesh Esli. So the Gemara says that that's a sofik. But the Shtika, Lachamat Mois is good or not. By us, it's not really a sofik, because you sent out wedding invitations. They march down the aisle. Everybody knows that they're getting married. It's a suffix if they're getting married. Even if he doesn't say anything, it should also be good. Asukim also inyan. Pashtus is good anyway. So we're makbid first to say hariyat, and then you give the ring. If you give the ring first, then you say hariyat. So bizman ha-gemara, that would sometimes be considered a shayla. Shtika lachamatman. Bizman is that it's not really a shayla, but the correct practice is that he should say hariyat prior to giving over of the ring. I think in the old madrid, it had it printed wrong. I think now the RCA printed a new madrich, so the madrichim, they're leading the rabbis in the right direction. The old Madrich was not by, I don't know if it was by an Orthodox rabbi. It could have been by somebody from the seminary. Huh? I don't remember. Who made the old Madrich? Golden. Oh, he was an Orthodox rabbi, I think. Huh? Different one. Oh. So I think in the old Madrich, if I'm not mistaken, it had it incorrect. It had, first you give the ring, then you say Hariyat Mekudeshes. That's not really correct. The more correct practice is first to say Hariyat Mekudeshes, and then to give the ring. Many European rabbanim had a practice. Is that a style today? No one does. Rav Soloveitchik used to have this all the time. He would say word for word with the chosin. Harei, harei, at, at, mekudeshes. If you have a chosin that doesn't know how to say hariat, so you got to say for him. If you have a chosin that knows how to say, what's the problem? So they patterned this practice after the Mishnah in Bikurim. It says that the farmers used to bring Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. So those farmers knew, they had a plaque on the wall that had Arami Yavid Ovi. But you're not allowed to write a parsha from the Torah if it's less than a Sefer Shalom. So they're not going to write the whole Chumash Devarim. So how'd they write the plaque? So they wrote in Rosh Tevis. Aleph, 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 Arami Vayerid Mitzrayim, Vav Mem. So you got to be able to figure out. Aleph, 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 Vav Mem. Yeah, Arami Yavid Ovi, Yerim Mitzrayim. The first pasuk is not there. How do you figure out the rest? So most of the farmers couldn't figure out what it said in the Rosh Tevis. So those who knew how to say it, figured it out. Those who didn't know how to say it, they had someone say it for them. So the Mishnah says they were so embarrassed. Oh, I'm a nice guy, I bring Bikurim, and they humiliate me in public, because they were all standing online, and the first 10 guys figured out their Rosh Tevis, and the next guy couldn't say. So the people stopped bringing Bikurim. They didn't want to be humiliated. Nimnu milahavit, they stopped bringing Bikurim. The Iskinu, the Mishnah says, made a takana to shiu makrenes akol. Even if the farmer is the biggest Torah scholar in the world, you have somebody recite with him Arami Avidavi, Kidei Shalalavai Shismishayni Yedeh, in order not to embarrass those who don't know how to say. So Taisus extends this, that's our practice of Kriya Sator. We have a Balkori who lanes. His Bana Gemara, they had no institution of a Balkori. Whoever got an Aliyah had to lane his Aliyah. So then in the days of the Balei Taisus, some of the people would lane properly, some of the people would butcher up their Aliyah, they would kill it. Some of them would say, I don't know how to lane, they would be humiliated. They would tell the truth. I don't know how to lane. Please lane for me. So in order, Kadesh Lalavash is Misheni Odeya. So by the Ashkenazim, by many Sephardim, I think they still have the practice. Each guy lanes, he gets his own Aliyah, and he lanes. And by the Ashkenazim, I guess they're less learned. So no less Tanakh, whatever the story, whatever the reason is. So they instituted the practice of having a Balkori lane for everybody, Kadesh Lalavash is Misheni Odeya. The Beis Shmuel on the side of the Ebenezer quotes the Tshuvas HaRambam, that the Rambam says the same is true really regarding the Bicha Seirisim. There is a fundamental machlokes, the Rambam and Tosfos, what is the nature of Bicha Seirisim? The Rambam and the Ravid are both of the opinion that Bicha Seirisim is basically a Bicha HaMitzvah. Like before you shake a lulav, you say a bracha. Before you put on talis and tefillin, before you bench lift, you say a bracha. So before you're about to get married, you say a bracha. You say the bracha before you give the ring. Who should say the bracha? The chassan is doing the mitzvah, getting married. He should say the bracha. Not exactly 100%. We don't say Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu l'kadeshan. So Isha, some Rishonim had such a nusach in addition to what we call the Bicha Seirisim. The Ozura quotes, there were those who said that Bar Piagofen, and they said Asher Kedushanu kadeshan so Isha. Then they said Asher Kedushanu, however it goes, the Bicha Seirisim. I forgot already. Tzivanu al Aroy, the long nusach. Yeah. So we don't have that practice. We don't say a short bracha l'kadeshan so Isha. We say the long bracha. So the Rambam holds that, the Rambam and the Rabbi hold that, that long bracha, that's a Bichas HaMitzvah, and the Chosin should really say it, but sometimes the Chosin can't read the Hebrew with Nekudah, so why humiliate him on the day of his wedding? So that's why the Minig, the Rambam writes, that's why the Minig developed, that we always have a Masada Kiddushin say the bracha for him, Kidei Shalol Abayesh Yismi Sheini Yadeh, unless the Chosin is a Rabbi, unless the Chosin is the Rabbi, you have a single Rabbi. After a couple of years of marrying off other couples, now it's time for him to get married. So you don't have to have another rabbi recite the Bichas Erisin for him. That's what the Beis Shmuel says. He can say his own Bichas Erisin. Because there's no concern of it. Let's say the Balkori gets an aliyah. He has to get another Balkori to lane for him. He's the designated Balkori. He's the one who's laying Kadesh Shalom Levayish the other. So we know that he prepared it. So if you give him an aliyah, he can lane his own. So over here, the Rambam, they say that according to the Rambam, the whole idea of having someone recite the Bichas Erisin on behalf of all of the Hasanim, Skadesh Lalavai, Shishmishani Yadeya, that the rabbi himself is getting married, that's okay, he can recite his own bracha. The Balei HaTosfos disagree. Their opinion is, the Tosfos in Psochim, Dav Zayin. Balei HaTosfos are of the opinion The Birchas Erisin is a Birchas Shevach V'Hoidah. It's not a Birchas HaMitzvah. And as such, Birchas Shevach V'Hoidah should dafka be recited after giving the ring. Birchas HaMitzvah and Birchas HaNenin is always recited over Lasiyos, immediately before performing the mitzvah, or immediately before eating the food, or having the drink. And Birchas Shevach V'Hoidah is always recited after you see the lightning, and after you hear the thunder, and after you see the Yam HaMelech, and after you win the Irish sweepstakes, after everything happens. You don't say the bracha as they're about to make the drawing. You say the bracha. You say it after all the good things are, after all the tragedies occur, whatever it is that one is saying a bracha. So Tosfos' opinion is that the Birchas Erisin should be recited the Dafkes Lachar Asiyos, and after the Chosin is already Mekadosh the groom. According to Tosfos, the Birchas Erisin doesn't belong specifically to the Chosin. He's not more mechuyav than anybody else. The Birchas Erisin has to be recited by someone present on behalf of everybody there. According to the Rambam and the Raiva, the Birchas Erisin is really should be recited by the Chosin, possibly the Kala, that's the Sofik and Nari Bihuda in the Tshuvas. The Pesach Tshuva and Ebenezer, Simen Nun, quotes the Nari Bihuda's Tshuva, who is not sure. Does the Birchas Erisin only, according to the Rambam, that it's a Birchas HaMitzvah, so the mitzvah to get married only applies to men. The women are not obligated to fulfill Piri Beriviu. Doesn't necessarily mean that women don't have to get married. Maybe it means that the Rambam counts as two distinct mitzvahs. One mitzvah to get married, another mitzvah to have children. So we know that the Tanoim had a machloikis in the Mishnah in the end of Perek Abo Yabimta, are the women obligated in the mitzvah Piri Beriviu? So the accepted opinion is no. Women are not obligated to fulfill Piri Beriviu. But maybe the women are still obligated to get married. So this is an Asik in the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvahs. The Rambam gives you a list of all the mitzvahs at the end of the whole Sefer HaMitzvahs. He gives you a list of the mitzvahs that the women are exempt from. So the different editions, the different kisrayat. So some of them have included in the list the mitzvah to get married, the women are exempt from. The mitzvah of having children, the Rambam lists there. Women are not mechuyav. But the mitzvah of getting married, which he counts as a separate mitzvah, so some of the versions of the Sefer HaMitzvahs don't have that mitzvah listed as one of the mitzvahs that the women are exempt from. So it sounds as if they're two distinct mitzvahs. Women are mechuyav to get married, they're not mechuyav to have children. Yeah. The Pashto says nowadays, but the Rambam tells you how many, he gives you a number, how many mitzvahs are the women exempt from. So the number doesn't correspond to how many mitzvahs he lists. So obviously there's one missing. So the one that's missing is the one about getting married. So that's why the newer editions of the Sefer HaMitzvahs LaHaRambam that were translated from the original Arabic, I think all the new editions do have this, that the women are exempt. That the Rambam didn't come up with so great a chiddush to say that the women are mechuyav to get married, but they're not mechuyav to have children. No, the women are not mechuyav to get married either. But the Nadi Behuda is not sure. Maybe, let's say, a woman wants to say bracha on shaking a lulav, so the Ashkenazim have the practice that the women do say bracha. So maybe even if you say women are exempt from getting married, but Lamaisa, the girl is getting married. She's not marrying a man. The girl is marrying a girl. So, I mean, the girl is marrying, the man is marrying a girl. So if the man is marrying a girl, so the girl is also in fulfillment of the mitzvah. She's not mechuyav. It's like a woman shaking a lulav. So maybe the bracha should relate both to the chasen and to the kala. Nadi Behuda is not sure. He's talking lahalacha about a situation where the chasen is deaf. So how can the rabbi say a bracha if the chasen can't hear? The rabbi, according to Tosfos, the Birchas Erisin should be recited by somebody who is present. It has nothing to do with the chasen specifically. All of the people attending the wedding have an obligation to see to it that someone should recite the Birchas Erisin. According to the Rambam and the Raiva, they hold that it's a Birchas HaMitzvah. So the mitzvah is mutalus on the chasen. The chasen should say. If the chosin is deaf, so how can you have the rabbi say the bracha on his behalf if he's not shomea? He can't say shomea kainim. So if he's deaf but he's able to speak, so he should have the chosin say the bracha. So Nadi Behuda is not sure, what if the chosin is deaf and the kala is able to hear? Maybe the rabbi can say the bracha on behalf of the kala. Are they both obligated to say the bracha? Or should you say no, only the chosin is obligated, the kala is not obligated to say the bracha. So Sofik and Nadi Behuda, yeah.
In regards to someone who can't say the words, or is it possible to say it in a different language, Lashon Kodesh?
Yeah, sure you can say.
Would that be not what Gilead chose not to do that, though?
If the guy doesn't understand Hebrew, it's better that you should say it. Tell him to say Ariad, then make him say it in English also, to make sure that that he knows what he's talking about. Sure, you should say it in English. I attend many weddings where the chosin said in English. Years ago, I don't know now, I don't attend weddings of secular people anymore. But years ago, my father used to have a lot of chuppahs at home. So he had a lot of times people who didn't know Hebrew at all, they weren't so observant. So he always had them say Hariyat, and then he had them say it in English before he gave the ring, to make sure that that they know what they're getting themselves into. That by giving the ring, this is the Kiddush. It's interesting, there is a fascinating tshuva in the Shabbos Tshuva's Chelkas Yaakov. I think they have on sale across the street in the Sfarim Center. Chelkas Yaakov is by Rabbi Breisch from Switzerland. He was the Mechutna of the Minchas Yitzchak from the Eid HaRedes. So in the Chelkas Yaakov has an interesting tshuva where he discusses who has the right to pick the Masada Kiddushin, the Chosin or the Kalah. So he says, it depends. What's the nature of Birchas Erisin? If you hold like the Rambam in Tosfos that Birchas Erisin is the Birchas HaMitzvah, then it should either be the Chosin alone, because it's his bracha, and the rabbi saying the bracha on his behalf. Or according to the Nadi Behuda, is Sofek, and Behuda out of Sofek, if the Chosin is deaf, can the Masada Kiddushin say the bracha on behalf of the Kalah? So maybe the Chosin and the Kalah. So maybe they have to make up sure between the two. Maybe the Chosin and the Kalah. However, if you all like Tosfos' opinion, Tosfos' opinion is that it's not a Birchas HaMitzvah at all. It doesn't belong to the Chosin or to the Chosin and the Kalah. It's a Birchas Shevach V'Hidoy that has to be recited by somebody present on behalf of all of the people present. So you should really take a poll of all the people present. Let's say the Chosin wants his Rosh Yeshiva, some guy's American, so no one ever knows. No one knows who in the world the guy is. He flies into the wedding. The Kala wants her Rosh Yeshiva from Eretz, so he flies in all. And the Balabatim want the local Orthodox rabbi from the shul. They don't know who this guy is. They don't know who that guy is. So according to the Bali Atosis, the Bracha Birchas Erisin is recited on behalf of all of the participants. So they're the Balabatim. They should decide. It shouldn't be decided by the Chosin. Shouldn't be decided by the Chosin and the Kala. Should really be decided. Shaz, how do we paskin? How do we paskin? So in the Machlokes, when do you say the bracha, before or after? Our practice is that we say the Birchas Erisin before the Chosin gives the ring to the Kalah. So obviously it seems that we're following the Rambam. Bottom line, however, in the Sefer Afikei Yam, he quotes from Rav Simcha Zelek, who was a Dayan in Brisk, under Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim was the Rav in Brisk. Simcha Zelek said, we really don't follow the Rambam. We really hold like Tosfos. Why? He said that the practice was, before the First World War, after the First World War, there used to be Masada Kiddushin in Europe for people who were atheists. They were communists. They didn't believe in God at all. So how can you say, I'm saying a bracha, the rabbi saying a bracha, I'm here for the Chosin Kala. They don't believe in Hashem, Elokeinu, Kedushanu, V'tzivanu. They don't believe in anything. So how do you say a bracha? The answer is that the bracha is not for him. We assume it's a bracha shevach v'hidor that has to be recited on behalf of all of the people participating. L'chatchila v'choshish for the Rambam, so we say the bracha over l'asiyasim before you give the ring. But he says, bottom line, we really don't hold like the Rambam. We really hold like Tosfos, he says, v'haraya. We have ma'aseh mechoyam, that we say brachas for people who are non-believers. We assume that the bracha is really on behalf of all of the participants, all the attendees in the wedding. So then the choice of the Masada Kiddushin, according to the ruler, according to the explanation that the Chelkas Yaakov gives, sounds logical. Who should determine, who should be the balabos to decide who should say the Birchas Erisin? Should neither be the Chosin, nor the second option, the Chosin and the Kala together. Should really be all of the people present should decide. They should take a poll at the wedding. From all the people attending the wedding, who should say the Birchas Erisin? It may turn out to be neither of the choice, the first choice of the Chosin, not the first choice of the Kala. I don't know. Chosin Dovim Melech, very restricted application. Yeah.
Can you make Kiddush for an atheist? Assuming that you had already made Kiddush yourself.
I don't think so. Unless mitam chinuch. The Gemara says you're not permitted to say a bracha levatol unless mitam chinuch. If you think by reciting Kiddush you'll get him to be observant. So in the days of the Gemara, they only had chinuch for little children. So the Gemara talks about me saying a sha'akal ni'ibidvar before a child is eating a piece of chicken. I'm training the child in saying a bracha. Today, bismanazel, we have chinuch for adults. Bismanazel, Gemara, they never have chinuch for adults. So we have chinuch for adults. So chinuch for adults also, you can say a bracha levatol also. If you think you're going to get somewhere.
It's a bracha levatol because it's as if he's not saying.
He doesn't believe in it.
He's not saying.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in anything. So. Apparently, we assume that it's a really a bichah shevach v'hidor. So the more correct place to say the bracha would have been lachras yasam. But if you say bichah shevach v'hidor, evel as yasam, It's also good b'di'evit. So we choose to do it over l'asiyasim to satisfy the Rambam. According to the Rambam, he said the bracha afterwards. He said bracha levatola. The Rambam says mashenasik v'anasik. You can't say the bracha after. So if we'll do like Tosfos, according to the Rambam, we're saying a bracha l'matzalah. So if you do like the Rambam, and according to Tosfos, it's good b'di'evit. But l'maisa, we say the bracha for non-observant, forget about non-observant, non-believers. That's what the Simcha Zorach says. We say the bracha for non-believers. So obviously we have taken the position of the Tosfos, that the bracha has to be recited, not by the chasm, not by the kalb. The bracha should be recited by on behalf of all of the participants in the wedding.
About the Christian people who are Orthodox, but traditional atheists, they believe.
Okay, that's not a problem. Okay, so they believe in Hashem, Kitchan, and Tzivanu. They don't observe everything. Okay, but at least they believe. But they used to say brachas for people who are non-believers, and they say we do it all the time. They say we do it all the time because we really hold like this. Yeah.
What about nowadays? Some people are really, if the girl wants to give a ring after.
Right, so in the biography of the Nodib Yehuda, they write that on one occasion he was pressured into performing a marriage. He was the rabbi in the community, he had to perform all the marriages, he had no choice. And once there was a couple, they insisted on having a double ring ceremony, like the goyim had, which is not proper, but he had no choice. So he had the chasm say, Hariyat Mekudesh Lishli, the Baal Kedas Moshe Yisrael, and then he had the kala say, Hariyat Mekudesh Lishli, Kedas Franz Yosef, the Hamadina. To make it clear that it's not part of the religious ceremony. It's really, we should avoid it. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, you should really avoid it. Because it may be misunderstood. The Chasen Kala may think that the marriage ceremony is not completed until they both give rings to each other. In which case, Rav Moshe raises a possibility. Maybe that's considered a lack of Das Kiddushin. The Chasen has to understand that by giving the ring, this clinches the whole Kiddushin. If he thinks this is half, and it's not completed until the Kala gives the ring to him, so then that may be considered a lack of Das Kiddushin. So if one is not that pressured into it, so you should turn down such a wedding. Tell them that we don't do that. If you really get stuck and you have no brera, and you feel you have to perform the marriage, so then you should save it till the end. There are Orthodox rabbis who save it till after all the Shev Brachas, after everything is all over. Then the rabbi makes an announcement, the marriage ceremony is over according to Jewish practice, and now according to the custom of the land, the Kala will demonstrate her love for the chosen by giving him a love ring. Okay, so the rabbi should make it clear that that's not part of the marriage ceremony according to law.
I've seen in the feminist circles that instead of doing a kinyan of the ketubah on a handkerchief or a pin, they do a kinyan of the ring, they say, I have make a pin, close neck, with the ring under the
ketubah. Okay. The Rambam's opinion is that the Birchas Erisin is a Birchas HaMitzvah, and either we follow the Rambam or B'choshish for the Rambam. So we say the Bracha Oyva L'Asiyasam in advance. So Oyva L'Asiyasam, the Gemara doesn't say Kodim L'Asiyasam. The Gemara uses an expression Oyver. So the Rishonim understand, the Shulchan Aruch, but the Rishonim say Oyver means to the exclusion of Oyver the Oyver. If it's too far in advance, it's Koidim, but it's not called Oyver. The Birchas Erisin, like any Birchas HaMitzvah, should be recited immediately prior to performing the Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, when you say the Bracha on the Tefillin, you have the Shalyad on your arm, and you're about to tighten it, so the Gemara says, Bein Hanocha Lehiduk. The Gemara says, you don't say the Birchas HaTefillin as you're unraveling the Tefillin, as you're taking it out from the Tefillin Zekh. You have to have it mamish immediately before you're about to perform the mitzvah. So here also, the more correct practice is that the rabbi should ask all the questions that he wants in advance. Is it your ring? Is it Shabbat Pruta? He goes to the whole tizman before the rabbi says the Birchas Erisin. It's not proper to be mopsik. In between the Birchas Erisin, all of a sudden, now he's going to make a whole ceremony and ask, is it your ring? Is it Shabbat Pruta? And so on. They should call up the Edom in advance. Before the rabbi starts to say the Bar Piagof and over the Birchas Erisin, they should call up the Edim and they should show the, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that the rabbi should show the ring to the Edim and ask is it Shavu Puta. Obviously it's Shavu Puta. What kind of a stupid question is that? So the Rambam says, we want the girl to hear. You should say it loud enough that the Kala should hear that the ring is Shavu Puta, so even if it turns out that it's not as valuable as she thought it was. She thought me or it's worth $300. Comes out it's only worth $10, only worth $5. So since the rabbi said to the Edim, it's a Shavu Puta, so it's understood that she's agreeing to marry him, even if it turns out that that's all it's worth, is a Shavu Puta. There shouldn't be any mistakes. So this, all of this should really be taken care of before the rabbi begins to say the Bar Piyad Rav. Not in between. Shows how much wine do you have to drink. So usually when you have a Koshal Bracha, so the Gemara says you have to drink a Maloy Lugma. A Maloy Lugma by an Adam Beinani. Maloy Lugma, the Mishnah says, is a different size depending on how wide your mouth is. How much wine, how much liquid can you hold in one cheek if you lean over sideways? So by an Adam Beinani, so by larger, so whoever has a big mouth has a more Maloy Lugma. People with a small mouth has a smaller Maloy Lugma. By an Adam Beinani, there are more quotes from the Rishonim there. It's a Rov Revis. Okay. So, the question is over here, do you really need a Maloy Lugma? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, I remember at my wedding, Rav Moshe Feinstein told me that the Koyse Erisin is not Medina de Gemara, that's only a Minik HaGoyin. He said, yeah, you just take a sip. You don't have to drink a Maloy Lugma from that. The Koyse Amisuin, that's assumed to be, the Rosh quotes the Goyinim who had a tradition, so we don't have it in our Gemara, but they had a tradition that that's Medina de Gemara. The Bizman de Gemara, that was assumed to be the case, that if you have a cup of wine, that the proper thing is you should recite the Birchas Nisun over a cup of wine. If you don't have, you don't have. You say the Birchas Nisun without a cup of wine. It's not miyakin. But if you have a cup of wine, you enhance the chshivas of the Birchas Nisun by reciting over a cup of wine. So then you should really require a Maloy Lugma. So that's already a shaila. If the chosin takes a little bit of a sip and the kala takes a little bit of a sip, can you add together the little sip that he had, the little sip that she had, does that add up to a Maloy Lugma? And Hilchas Shabbos, that's a machlokes. When you make Kiddush, and the husband is going to take a sip, and the wife is going to take a sip, and their 15 children are going to take a sip. So can you be mitzar if everybody sips together to add up to a Maloy Lugma? But he's saying, no, it has to be a Maloy Lugma that one person drinks. So there's a machlekes there. So usually by the wedding, everybody's mekel. That we don't have either the chasen or the kala drinking Maloy Lugma. They're afraid they're going to get drunk. They're afraid they may get drunk. In recent years, the custom has developed that instead of using red wine, years ago they always used red wine, and so once in a while they would spill the wine on the caller's gown, so they would have a whole stain. So the custom, new custom developed that they use white wine, so even if it spills on the caller's gown, it won't make any stain. Okay. So Zayin HaZayin. And Achreinim, there's a practice that before you say Hamoitzi, if you want to say Hamoitzi to be Moitzi other people, so you say Bishus. And if you want to say Bar Piyad Rav and over wine, so you say Savri. That's what the Goyim have an expression. Masbirim ala yain, umarshim ala pas. You say Savri over wine. Masbirim ala yain. And you say Bishus when you eat bread. Umarshim ala pas. The question is, why is that so? So that's a special din that you always say Savri over wine and Bishus over bread. Or maybe there's a different reason. So there's Lemaisa, there's a Machlekes Achreinim, when the rabbi is about to say the Bar Piyad Rav on behalf of the Chosn Kala, both times, the Bechus Eis and Bechus Nisuin, should he say Bishus or should he say Savri? So some say he should say Savri, Masbir Malayayin. And others say no, you say Bishus. They give a whole explanation why you usually say Savri over Kiddush wine, because it's in the middle, because he says Baichulu first, it's the middle of a whole story. But whenever you're starting from scratch, then you say Bishus. Others say Bishus. Yeah. Today, the practice usually is that the rabbis don't want to get involved in the machlek, so they don't say either. They don't say Bishus, they don't say Sabri, but you should tell the Chosn Kala, pay attention to the bracha. You should tell them the bracha is for you. So then you go, we used to say Sabri before he said the bracha over the cup of wine under the chut. Yeah, so how do we do the Kiddushin? We give a ring. You say you have to have Eidus Lekim Adav, you have to make sure the Eidim are kosher Le'edus. The Edom cannot be related to each other. The Edom cannot be related to the Chosn Kala. Everybody's related to everybody else. How can they not be related? Tenth cousin is also no good. So the dinim in Shulchan Aruch, how far you go. Strictly speaking, two brothers are called Rishon B'Rishon. If they have children, the first cousins are called Sheni B'Sheni. So Sheni B'Sheni is Pasalaita. Sheni B'Shlishi is Kosher. If you have a first cousin once removed, that's already Kosher Leidus. Certainly if you have second cousins, that for sure is Kosher Leidus. Even first cousins are only postulated if the first cousins are men, or one is a male and one is a girl cousin who's an. It's a female cousin who's married. So my first cousin by marriage is also postulated. It's Bal Kishta once. But if you have two girls who are first cousins and they are married, so you don't say Bal Kishta twice on the level of Sheni B'Sheni. That's L'Cholade. It's Rishon B'Rishon. You do say if you have two sisters and they're both married, so the two brothers-in-law, that's called gis. A gis means a brother-in-law with a combination of two marriages. I'm married to this sister and he's married to the other sister, So Gis, Gimel, Yud, Samach in Hebrew, Mishnayis means the brother-in-law based on a double Balki Yishtoi. So that we, Machlekes, we pass on that a Gisim Apsulim Leidus. What if you have an aunt and a niece who are both married? So you say Balki Yishtoi twice by Rishon Mishani. So that's a Machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, Machlekes Balmon and Ramban, 2 days in the Chaber and Hilchas Seidus and Chashim Mishpat. So we avoid that. But after that, strictly speaking, is kosher. So then there's a minig that some Achrayim quote. The Beis Shmuel on the side of Ebenezer quotes it from the Achrayim, Mitzvah thing, that you should avoid having relatives for Edi Kiddushin and Edi Haget. The sign of Ksuba is not a problem. For the Yichud is not a problem. But for the Edi Kiddushin, some have a minig. Not everybody observes this minig. Some have a minig. You're makbid even up to the point of Revi Berevi with two Balki Yishtos. Revi Berevi often will be the case they don't even know each other. They don't even know who they are. Revi Berevi with two Balki Yishtos. It means Sheni B'Sheni is first cousin, Shlishi B'Shlishi is second cousin, Revi Berevi is third cousin. With two Balki Yishtos means that my wife and his wife are third cousins and we're both married. That's a twice Balki Yishtos. So I was once at a wedding like that, and they called up the other eight kiddushin. Was my when I first got married, I knew all the whole family. Now I couldn't even figure out exactly how we were related. But at that time, I remember we were Revi with two Balki Yishtos. So in the commentaries on the Chazal Shulchan Aruch, they claim that there's a minig. How can you have a minig? It never comes up. How can you have such a minig? The Rambam says the minig is not chala on the davar she'eino matzil. How can it be? The other guy came from Chicago to the wedding. The Revi Berevi with two Balki Yishtos, he came from Chicago. It's Rabbi Orlean's father-in-law. It's my Revi Berevi with two Balki Yishtos. I don't remember how now, but at the time that someone else, I think Rabbi Mendelssohn's parents got married. So I think at his wedding, we were the 280. No, it was someone else's wedding. Someone else's wedding. So I remember who it was. So that was the thing. So strictly speaking, it's kosher. If the Masada Kiddushin is interested in fulfilling the minik, so he should not have Revi Berevi with two Balki Yishtos. Okay. You have to make sure the Eidim are Shomrei Mitzvahs. You have to make sure they're not Gazlonim. If an Eid is a Ganav, so he's Posel Eidus. If he cheats in business, Posel Eidus. Many Rabbanim would never use any businessmen as Eidim. Many businessmen would never use any Rabbanim. The business of a Gazlon is Posel Eidus. So whoever is a Gazlan. Rav Kook used to be machmir not to use the secretary. Rav Nehriya has several volumes of biography of Rav Kook. He writes that on one occasion a couple came to take care of the get, and one of the Eidim didn't show up on time, so waiting. It was almost Shkia, and the meaning is you take care of the get by Yom, you don't do a get by Laila. So the secretary, the male secretary, was a religious man in the office. He said, if you want, I'll serve as an aide for the get. So Rav Kook never answered him. He left it hanging and never answered. So finally, it's getting so late. They're going to have to push off the get till tomorrow. So he said, if you want, I'll sign. So Rav Kook had explained to him why not. He couldn't leave him like this. He said, he has as a policy, he doesn't like to use secretaries as aidim, male secretaries, even though they're very religious. Because usually, once in a while, they'll take a stamp for themselves, or they'll take an envelope for themselves. He's a Gazlan. The Gemara says that a Gazlan is Marehete, is Koshelated. Is that Mamish Marehete? The guy says, it's a big deal. Everybody takes a stamp. Everybody takes a little envelope once in a while. So Rav Kook was Makbid. He didn't want to use secretaries. If a person is Marehete, let's say a guy cheats on income tax, he should have been postulated. So he can say he's Marehete. Look, he says everybody cheats, and even though he knows that he's doing wrong, it's considered a Ganef B'Shege. But let's say a guy cheats, big time stuff. I remember I was once at a wedding, so all the kibbutzim was split 50-50. It was a boy who learned here in the Kaila, then he went on to Lakewood and he married a girl from the Aguda. So all the kibbutzim was split 50% from the Chasson Tzad, 50% from the Kalas Tzad. So that's when Shnia Kotler was then the Masada Kiddushin, because he couldn't split the city Kiddushin. So he was Masada Kiddushin. And then the aide was split. So I was one aide from the boy's side. He used to live there in the neighborhood. And then the other aide from the girl's side was there. And they kept on calling him up, and he didn't go up. No one understood why. So the next day in the yeshiva, I saw Rabbi Herschel Schechter, that's Rabbi J.J. Schechter's father. So he was at the wedding also. So he said, last night we were at the wedding. I was standing next to that other rabbi, and they kept on calling him up, and no one understood why he didn't go up. I don't know why. He didn't know why. He said, he asked them, they're calling you up. He said, they can get other Adam. It's okay. So we didn't understand why till a few days later. His picture appeared in the New York Times on the first page. He was indicted by the government on tax, on fraud. He was cheating the government tremendous amounts of money. He had a yeshiva in Brooklyn. He's skedaddled now. Now he lives in Eretz Yisrael. Now he probably cheats the Israeli government. But at that time he used to cheat the American government. So he was an Elach HaGanef. He knew he was posulatus. So he didn't want to foul up the Kedushin. HaGanef is posulatus. So the main thing, you got to make sure the guy's not a Ganef. Then we passed him, like, there are six cases where we passed him like Abaye against Rova, Yal Kigam. So one of them is the mem of Yal Kigam is Mumar Echon Nebelis Lahachis. The guy's not a Gazlan, but he's just not religious. Not that he compromises his religious principles for money. He's a reformed Jew. He's very honest. Very honest. Absolute integrity. But he doesn't keep Tarsha, doesn't keep Tarsha Amishpacha. That's not from his principles. So that's a Machloekis Abai Verov, and we pass him like Abai, that he too is postulatus. Even though he's very, very honest, he's postulatus. So you got to make sure that the person is not a Ganef. You got to make sure that he's religious, and you got to make sure he's not related. Let's say these chumis that we said about the third cousin twice removed, all these things. If Mikra Din, the guy's really kosher latest, if you're going to observe Amidas Chasidus to get someone else, so is the other guy going to be just as religious and just as honest as him? Or the other guy's going to be questionably religious? So if he's the most religious guy there, so then you use the third cousin. You don't look for chumis. If you have other people who are equally observant, and this guy is a shtickle relative, a distant relative with a chumra, and the other guy is not a relative, so then you take the one who's not a relative. But if this one is the most honest and the most religious person there, so you take him and you ignore the Midas Chasidus of not using the relatives up until the stage of Revi with two Balki Ishtas. Okay, so we finally succeed in getting the couple married. Yes?
When I pay my taxes, should I overpay? Because perhaps I got a tip for something that I forgot to write down in my ledger, and it was a $10 tip, and I'm... Should I
look at
by a few dollars to my taxes because
I'm
cheating the government?
No, I don't think so. When they brought Rabbi Soloveitchik up for cheating on income tax, what happened was he got all of the shochtim he used to give Ashkochas on a slaughterhouse in Boston. They got all the shochtim to form a union in order that they should get more reasonable conditions. Because he said the shochtim won't be able to do a good job. They have to work 20 hours a day. And they have to be there in the slaughterhouse a minute after Havdolah Matzoy Shabbos. So he had them organize a union, and they got much more reasonable hours. So the slaughterhouse was angry at Rabbi Soloveitchik, so they wanted to get even with him, why he organized the shochtim's union. So they assumed that Orthodox rabbis don't pay tax. So they mastered to the government that they should investigate him, he doesn't pay tax. Turned out that he overpaid the tax. So that was the taina that they had. That they said that he doesn't pay any taxes. And then after they had a long investigation for months and months, then they had a newspaper article that the judge said, I never met such an honest person in my whole life. It turned out that he paid $2.14 extra or something like that. He overpaid his taxes. Yeah, but not mechuyav to donate money to Uncle Sam.
But would you be possible if you underpaid taxes by $2?
No. I say, even if a person cheats on taxes and he knows that he's doing wrong and he really is doing wrong, he doesn't become postulator, strictly speaking, because that's Moira Heter. People are Moira Heter on that. Everybody cheats on taxes. The President of the United States, the senators cheat. The mayor of New York City, everybody cheats. So everybody says it's okay, it's not so big. So we all know that it's not right. But that's called Bishoygik. When it gets the psulatus, we call that Bishoygik. You're not allowed to cheat on the taxes, but if you did, you don't become postulator. But if a guy cheats, big time stuff, you know, $100,000, he's cheating on a lunch program for his yeshiva. So you can't say everybody's Moira Heter, everybody does it. So in that case, the guy would taka be postulated. In such a case, it would be postulated. So we're trying to raise an issue.
Question, sometimes it's not a condition. I mean, he's the rabbi of the community, he knows the Adim, and he knows how from they are, marital counseling and stuff like that. How far, I mean, in terms of how from...
That's really a problem. Here in Breuers, they have the same Eid Kiddushin at every single wedding, whether you like it or not. They come with their wine, they come with their bottle of wine, with their siddur, with their two Eidim. The two Chazanim, I think, are always the Eidim at every wedding. They have religious Chazanim, and they don't allow the couple to pick their own Eidim, because they don't know whom you're going to pick. the rabbi should be careful. He should pick the aid. The rabbi has to pick the aid. It's not a matter of kibbut. The rabbi has, that's the most important thing. The rabbi can be a goslim. The rabbi can be a machal Shabbos, but the aidim have to be religious people.
Let's, I mean, let's say you know that their Shomer Shabbos kashrut, but when it comes to Taras Mishpacha, they're not.
Not really right. They know that Orthodox Jews are supposed to observe Taras HaMishpacha and they chose not to. So that's not right. That's amazing.
Not, I mean, not that they're not doing, but maybe that they're not doing it as well as they should, or whatever the... I'm thinking a rabbi won't, generally will know these kinds of things.
The din is that one is only postulated is if he violates an Aver Sheyesh, but let's say if you know Chalila that someone talks Lashon Hara. I say it's postulated. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam in Shulchan Aruch says, you only possible it is if you violate an aver sheyesh ba malchus, either malchus ben atar, malchus ben the rabban. If there's malchus ben atar, it's possible it is ben atar. Malchus ben the rabban is possible it is ben rabban. A lashon hara, baruch Hashem, there's no malchus. So those of us who talk lashon hara are still kashulaitis. Those who violate some of the details of Taras HaMishpacha, but they don't violate the basic dinim, so also there's no malchus on that, no malchus nardis on that, so they don't become postulators. You should try to get the best datum that you can under the circumstances.
So they don't have to be religiously up to par, but the people saying the Shabbat brachos and the Tzibur also have to be within a certain level of religiosity, or as long as they're...
I don't think so. If they don't believe in God, so then they can't say a bracha. If they don't believe Kiddushonim, they don't believe in Torah Men HaShemayim. So how can he say Kedushanim and Mitzvotim and Tzivam? But if he believes that God created the world, he says Shakol Bar Lachvodo, so good, okay. What's the difference what else he believes? As long as he believes in the text of that bracha, so they can say that bracha. Taisus raises a problem. Taisus and Mishan raises a problem. Usually at a wedding, you have so many relatives present, why don't you say Nimtech and Ma'edim Karav Apostle, Edis Kulim B'Telo? If the din requires Edis Lekim Adova by a wedding, and if you don't have Edim watching when he gives over the ring, the Kedushin is not Chal, so you always have relatives watching. Why don't you say Karav Apostle? So Taisus says that that's not a kasha. The Psul, the Aloha of Karav Apostle, only applies to an Ed HaMeid. If people actually came to court and they testified, you had three people testify and one of them is a relative, so then you say Karav Apostle. But if you only have a situation of an Ed HaRoeh, you had many people watching and some of them are Krovim, so then you don't apply the whole rule of Karav Apostle. So according to Taisus, the problem is not a problem. The Ritva quotes the Achreinim, he quotes his Rabbein, he calls them the Achreinim. From his perspective, they were the Achreinim. We look back, they were Rishonim. But in his day, his Rabbein were the Achreinim. So he says, they had a taina against Taisus. The Taisus logic, the mocha that Taisus gives, why Eid HaRoya doesn't create a problem of Korah Apostle, is because by looking, you don't accomplish anything, and there's no, they're not called Mikai Medobar Kos Medobar. Al pishnei edim, al pishlosh edim, yokum dover. So that's only been mekayim edover akos medaber when the mekayim. So normally mekayim, you only accomplish something when you're an eid hamayid. If you're an eid hara, you don't accomplish. But by watching the chasana, you do accomplish. That's eidus lekima, though you do accomplish. So that's why the Ritva quotes Rabbeis of Achreinim that they felt that by wedding there is a problem of karav apostle, even if they're just watching. So our practice is like the Ritva recommends, that you should have two kosher edim. Have the two kosher edim have in mind, you tell them they should have in mind, to separate themselves from all of the other edim. We don't want to be mitzarif with all the other edim who are kosher. So that's what's called in Shulchan Aruch yichud edim, yom yachid the edim. You say that the edim should exclude themselves from all of the others. Rabbi Soloveitchik was he spoke English, but he spoke like a foreigner. He didn't speak like an American English. Spoke a highfalutin English. So when he used to perform a marriage, he would say, we're designating these two witnesses to the exclusion of all others. So people misunderstood what he meant. They thought, all the others are postulators. These are exclusively these two. It doesn't mean, that's not what it means. He meant the following. We, the two Adam, want to exclude ourselves from all the others. If it turns out that these two Adam are apostle, it's still good. The other two Adam are also good. We're excluding ourselves not to be mitzarf with the others, to be choshish for the chumrah of the Ritva. That you say Karav Apostle by Eid HaRoya as well. By Eid Kiddushin, you say Karav Apostle by the Eid HaRoya. Okay, so we finally succeeded in getting the couple married to have an erison. Then we got to make any soon. So how are you going to make any soon? So the Mishnah never says, the Gemara never says explicitly, how do you do any soon? How exactly do you do any soon? So the Rambam says, Nisun is either with Biyah or Yichud HaRoya LeBiyah. So the Magen Avraham says in Hilchas Brichas Hanena, we are choshish for the Rambam. So that's why we always have a yichud immediately following the chuppah. The Rambam says that standing under the canopy is the nisuin. Why should standing under the canopy constitute nisuin? What is that? Yichud, the halachic status. What is accomplished by standing under the canopy? So some achrayim, there's a commentary printed on the side of the page in the Eben Ezra that's called Eze Mikodesh. It's written by the one who is the rabbi in Buchoch. Buchoch is a little village in Galicia. So he writes in his commentary that the canopy has to be constructed in such a way that it should be like an Erev. It should be a Tzuras HaPesach, and because it's a Tzuras HaPesach on all four sides, at that location constitutes a separate room. Yeah, that poses a problem, because in Europe, a lot of times, most of the time, it didn't constitute a Tzuras HaPesach. In order to be considered a good Erev Tzuras HaPesach, you have to Kon Al Gabim. What they used to do was they had a rectangular shape, either square or rectangular shape cloth, and they used to have rings, metal rings in the four corners, and they used to have four poles that people would hold the other poles, and the top of the pole would go inside the ring, so you wouldn't have anything going from one pole to the other pole. The hole, you would have, let's say, like this. You would have the ring in the corner, and the pole would be over here. Wouldn't be anything going from the top of one pole to the other. So that's why in some communities they changed the chuppah, and they used to make a slit. In a lot of communities, they used to use the parochet as a chuppah. In the days of the Gemara says in Megillah that the parochet had the status of a tashmishi kedusha, so you wouldn't be allowed to use it for a chuppah. But in the days of the Rishonim already, that was no longer the case. The Ramon and Yeridei explains in the Hilchas Sefer Torah that the zman is there, the parochet. In the days of the Gemara, it would be a dover kavua that they would take down on every day of Kriyas HaTorah. They would take down the parochas when they were about to learn Kriyas HaTorah, put it on the shulchan, and put the Sefer Torah directly on the parochas. So the parochas would be mishamish the Sefer Torah directly. So that was tashmishi kedusha. In the later days, the practice is no longer like that. We never take down the parochas and put it on the shulchan. If you don't have a map on the shulchan, someone puts his talis down temporarily, but you never put down the parochas. So the parochas is really mishamish the Aron Kodesh, which in turn is mishamish the Sefer Torah. So that's what the Gemara calls a Megillah, a tashmish to tashmish. It's twice removed from the Sefer Torah, so it doesn't have the status of Kiddush. So the Ramah writes this in Yeridei, in Hilchas Sefer Torah, that the parochas today no longer has the status of tashmish and Kiddusha, and therefore the Achrenim say it was a common practice in Europe. They used to use the parochas to make the chuppah with it. So there were many parochas in Europe where they would have a diagonal slit in the cloth and all four corners. They wouldn't put a ring, a metal ring in the corner. They would have a slit so that when they would put the pole through the slit, they would have the cloth going on top between the one pole and the other, between this pole and this pole, and they felt that constituted a Tzuras HaPesach. So that's, I think, the minority opinion. Those poskim who insist that the chuppah serves as a nisuin is considered as if it's a separate room. It's like yichud. Yeah, but yichud, you have a lot of people standing there. The rabbi's standing there, the parents are standing there, everybody's standing under the chuppah. So they say it's okay, as long as they walked into a room specifically for the purpose of nisuin. Others disagree and they say it has nothing to do with Tzuras HaPesach. That's a wild, fantastic imagination. They say it's a different part. That the old practice always was a farasta knafecho ala masecho. That the way to demonstrate nisuin was that the boy would put something on the girl's head, the badeken. The badeken is nisuin. So the minig used to be in many places in Europe that they would put a talus over the head of the chassan and the kala. That's why the Sfaradim still have that minig, and the Yekis still have that minig. Yekis here, the Yekis from Frankfurt have a lot of Sfaradish minog. Many, many. So they say all the Sfaradish have Torahs. They say they don't say Shachyonu on Tkiya Shaif on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, like the Sfardim, like the Mechaber, and they don't say Shachyonu on Mikra Megillah in the morning, like the Sfardim. I have a lot of Sfardish in the home. So they retain this practice also. Yeah. How come the practice died down by the rest of the Jews? It's very simple. If the girl didn't go to the mikvah, you can't put a talus over the heads of both of them. So that's a pella. How can it be that over here in Broyers, they always succeed every single wedding? The girl is able to go to the mikvah. How is that physically possible? Have to have a certain percentage of cases where the girl was unable to go to the mikvah. So years ago it wasn't a problem. They didn't book the hall 6 months in advance. when they're ready to get married. So they said to get married another week and a half, and sure, they didn't have people flying in from Australia, they didn't fly in from Eretz Yisrael. Everybody came to the wedding in the same city, and sure. So they announced in advance. So the girl always went to mikveh in advance, and there was no problem. But today, in recent years, that you book a catering hall and you book a catering, you send out the invitations, and everybody plans in advance. So a lot of times, it turns out the girl can't go to the mikveh. So you can't put a talus on top of the heads of both of them. So that's probably why it was discontinued. So that's what some feel, that that's the practice of the chuppah. That if you have a cloth chuppah, the question is sometimes you have a wooden chuppah. Sometimes you have a plastic chuppah or a metal chuppah or something. So that's highly questionable. It could be that it has to be dafke cloth. It's really a fulfillment of a farasta kanatecha lamasecha. You're putting some cloth on top of the chosen kala, but because the kala sometimes went to the mikveh, sometimes it didn't, so we don't put it directly on top of them. So they're not leaning on each other with this thing on top of them. So this is a question. It's not exactly clear where is the nisuin. So one opinion is the Taz in Yerodea quotes from the Mordechai and Ksubis that the Badekin is the Nisuin. How can the Badekin be the Nisuin? That's the Farasta Knafat Lamsaf, but he does the Badekin before he even gives her the ring. So the Mishlam Melech and Hilchas Ishus points out, he has a tshuva from Rashi that if you did the Nisuin prior to the Erisin, so when you do the Erisin, you don't have to repeat the Nisuin. When you did the Nisuin prior to Erisin, nothing changed yet. But if you do the Erisin later on, so she'll switch from being a pnuya to become an asua. Instead of going in two stages, first he switches from a pnuya to an arusa, then he switches from an arusa to an asua. He already did the badekin before, so she switches in one step. She skips from a state of pnuya to the state of an asua. So some feel that the badekin is the nisuin. Some feel standing under the canopy is the nisuin. Some feel that the yichud is the nisuin. So we do all of the above. Some hold that none of these. Rabbi Avadi Yosef has a tshuva. He says they don't hold from any of these. He holds from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says when they go home, that's a nisuin. So he has a big problem. They go home, that's 6 hours later. So why did he say the bishop is sitting now? It's over the 6 hours before the time that they're going home. So how is that good? So that's, he doesn't really give such a cheerful answer on that. The kasha is better than the answer. According to those who feel like they're only going, that the nisuin is when you're going home. So why did you say the bichus nisuin 6 hours before they're going home? That's a problem. Anyway, because there is an opinion that the badekin is the nisuin, and there is a diun in Achreinim, the Osamech, and others have point out there seems to be a machlekes harishanim explicitly, a machlekes harishanim, whether edus lekim adav is only needed for kiddushin, or do you require edus lekim adav for nisuin as well? So if you require Edis and the Kiyam Adavah for Nisuin as well, then you should really have Edim when you do the Badek. And of course you have Edim. There are always a lot of men there. But you have the issue of Karav Apostles, so maybe you should be Miyachid Edim for the Badek. So sometimes Rav Soloveitchik used to be Miyachid Edim by the Badek. I think he did it just for educational purposes. I don't think he really held that you need. Because he personally, he printed a whole Dvar Torah in the Hesped for Adavah and Soloveitchik. He has a whole Dvar Torah printed where he explains why you don't need Edis and the Kiyam Adavah. He thought the whole thing was a chumrah. So you have to have a chumrah, and the whole yichud edim we hold is really a chumrah from the ritva. We really don't hold like the ritva. Mikra adim we hold that there is no problem of korav apostle by aid haroah, even by kiddush. So the whole thing is a chumrah on top of a chumrah. I think he did it for educational purposes, that the students who were there should see that there is such an opinion. So we do all the various forms of nisuin. The Magen Avraham writes in Hilchas Brichas Hanenin, he says when you say a bracha before a mitzvah, it should be oy balas yasm. When you say a bracha before eating food, you don't use the expression oy balas yasm, but it should be about the same. It should be soon before you're about to eat the food. Shouldn't we say a bracha now and then wait a long time and then eat the food or drink the mashkin? So he says the same is true regarding Brichas Nisuin. He says b'choshesh for the Rambam that we have a yichud immediately following the chuppah. So the proper practice is that you shouldn't have too long a pause in between the reciting of the Birchas Nisuin under the canopy and the going to the Yichud room. Some people have the practice that they have the rabbi hold the sermon after the whole ceremony is over. So it's against the Mogen Avraham. It's Mamsha Hefzik. And other people, they start under the chuppah, they start kissing everybody, kissing the parents and kissing the in-laws and kissing everybody. And it takes an hour from the time that they finish the chuppah till they go to the Yichud room. So that says in the Maharil that it's not right. That's what the Magen Avraham quotes from the Achronim, that it's not right. You're supposed to have the Yichud immediately following the Brachas under the Chuppah, because we're doing the Yichud to satisfy the Rambam's opinion. So you want to have the Brachas soon before, not a half an hour before. So you should try as much as possible to rush the Chasen Kala to the Yichud room. It looks a little funny if they run. I remember once at a wedding that the Chasen grabbed the Kala's hand and they ran. No, they didn't know what the guy was doing, because he was in my class, and I said there is the Maril says Maritim is Chasen Sakala. So he took it literally that he has to run with the girl. So people thought he was crazy. I don't know if you have to run, but you should try to navigate your way quickly. You should see to it that the Chasen Kala should go as quickly as possible to the Cheder HaYichud. I forgot to mention another, the Sefer Choshen points out about kashrus of the Edom. It shouldn't be Kroivim, it shouldn't be Ganovim, it shouldn't be Bali Avera. So he has another Rechumer. There is a Machlikus Satanoim. What about Oyev Asayne? Are they postulated? So we paskin ho Oyev Asayne are koshulated. So there's a Tesus on Daftes in Sanhedrin where Tesus writes as if Asayne is postulated. So how can it be it's against the Mishnah? So the Marshal on that Tesus in the Chof Mishlama quotes a missing line from the Tesis Shishana, from the Kisva Yad. The Tesis meant to say if you have a Sone Gomor, then everyone would agree that they're postulated. You know, the Machleg is Satana. We pass on the Sone is Koshulaitis, but if it's a Sone Gomor, I'd like to kill that guy. I want to murder him. So then I'm postulated. So the Tesis quotes from the Achronim that if a Sone Gomor is postulated, who had the Nami Oyev Gomor should be postulated. So he says you shouldn't use as Eidi Kiddushin the best friend of the Chosn. The best friend may be considered an Oyev Gomer. An Oyev Gomer may be postulated according to Tesis. So you shouldn't use Shushbinim. You should use people who they are acquainted, they know who the Chasen Kala are. But they shouldn't be the best friends. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a practice. Is the Din and Achrayim, what if you know that the Kala didn't go to Mikvah? So what do you do with putting on the ring? So the Achrayim said the Chosin should be careful not to touch the girl's hand because she didn't go to the mikvah. So some Achrayim and Rabbi Soloveitchik had it. Some say she should wear gloves and she should put the ring on the glove. Others make fun of the gloves. So Rabbi Soloveitchik had the practice that if the girl didn't go to mikvah, she should stretch out the palm of her hand and the Chosin should drop the ring in her hand rather than put it on the finger. So it's very embarrassing for the girl. Very embarrassing for the girl. So that's why most Achrayim don't hold from that chumrah. They just say you should put the ring without touching the hand. Should be careful not to touch the girl. The Pashta says it's not Derech Chiba, said it's no problem. That's how the Aderes writes. Rabbi Cook's father-in-law was a great poisek, the Aderes, so they printed a few years ago a collection of his tshuvas, Mana Eliyahu. So I was reading it on the plane back from Eretz Yisrael. I just got a copy now in Eretz Yisrael. So he has a tshuva about that. So he says it's not Derech Chiba, so what are they making such a whole fuss? But the Stechemet has a long arichas. You should wear gloves, you should drop it in the palm of the hand, all the different possibilities. I remember when Rabbi Soloveitchik said, he was very absent mind. So he screamed this into the mic, "Well, the Kala, please stretch out the palm of her hand." So the girl started to cry under the hoop. So I was one of the Aidens. So I turned away. I didn't want to watch the girl cry. So then Rabbi Soloveitchik screamed out, "And will the Aiden please pay attention?" The boys thought that the chumrah, instead of putting the, they didn't know that the girl didn't go to mikvah, they didn't understand why he told her to do that. They thought it's a new chumrah that you don't put the ring on the girl's finger. It was because the girl didn't go to mikvah, that's why. So that's what the Aderes writes. He said it's not Derech Chiba, it's a garnish and garnish. He thinks that it's okay. Years ago, they used to have one rabbi say all the brachas from the beginning to the end. Now it became a practice that you split up the brachas. So that's a big debate. Of Pesach Franka, the whole essay about this. Every bracha, the Gemara says, has to be posachas b'boruch, unless it's a bracha smucha l'chavetom. So under the chuppah, what do you say? You say bar piagofen. Okay, that's okay. Then you say baruch atah Hashem kenem achelam. That starts with baruch also. Okay. So strictly speaking, if you want to, you can split up the first two brachas. You can have one rabbi. I remember I attended a wedding. Rabbi Lichtenstein flew in from Eretz Yisrael to only say Bar Pi Agafen under the chuppah, and then they had a different rabbi say the second birchas, the birchas erison. They had, the boy had learned in Eretz Yisrael in the yeshiva, but he davened here in a shul in New York. So they split up the birchas erison. That was the first time, the last time I ever saw that one. So speaking, that wouldn't really pose a problem. That wouldn't pose a problem. Shaila is, let's say, the brachas of Soistasisu Sagel HaAkora, of the brachas Hamech Tesamach Reim HaHum, doesn't begin with Baruch Ato. So the reason why it doesn't have to begin with Baruch, because it's Smucha L'Chavetah. So that's the question, but I didn't say the previous brachas. So how was that Smucha L'Chavetah? So some insist that those brachas, Hamech Tesamach and Soistasis, can only be recited by the person who said the previous brachas. And others disagree. Nah, the whole thing is a series of brachas. It is smucha l'chavta. The bracha is smucha l'chavta. You didn't say the previous bracha, but the bracha is a smucha l'chavta. So it doesn't pose a problem. Some came up with a suggestion that you can't say bar pi agafen to be moitzi someone else. You can only say, if you say kiddush for someone else, then you can say bar pi agafen with the kiddush. But let's say Shabbos morning, where the whole kiddush only consists of bar pi agafen. Can I say kiddush to be moitzi somebody else? I'm not drinking wine now. I already finished eating. Can I say Bar Pi Agafen to be moitzi someone else? And the Shulchan Aruch says yes. The Ramah quotes places that yes. Rabbi Kiveger on the bottom of the page quotes that the Ritva says no. The Ritva says I can say Kiddush to someone else on Friday night, even though I'm not drinking the wine, because the Bar Pi Agafen goes together with the Kiddush. But Shabbos morning, the whole Kiddush only consists of Bar Pi Agafen. So Bar Pi Agafen alone, you can't say for others. So the Ramah passes against that. Even if one wants to be machmer. But this Ritva, the Pashta said that's only on Shabbos morning, but that's all you're going to say. But by the Chuppah, you're going to say Bar Pi Agafen with another bracha. Even though you are not going to say the other bracha, someone else is going to say the other bracha. So the Pashta says that you can't be moitzi someone else with the other bracha. But there is no requirement. Dafkid, it's so common now that they split up all the brachas. They say from the Satmar Rebbe that he used to make fun and he used to say that's not kim and atzait, the time will come that they may have one person to say bu, one person to say rich. Burich, they'll break up the syllable. He pronounced the syllable Burich, he didn't say Baruch. So he said, the time will come to split up the syllable. Yeah. It's a little bit silly. People think that there has to be. It doesn't have to be. You can have one rabbi to say everything from the beginning to the end. That's why it always used to be. They picked one rabbi in the Sadi Kedushin, and he said everything from the beginning to the end. No one will feel insulted either. It's not really right. A lot of times, the Mechabed relatives who break their teeth and they mispronounce the words, and a lot of times you're not Yotze the Bracha either, because they made so many mistakes, major mistakes, that it didn't even contain the theme that the Bracha is supposed to have. I remember years ago I attended, one of the boys from the yeshiva got married and he had a milchig wedding.
Was he a vegetarian?
No. And I showed him, I brought to the yeshiva, he learned in the kollel. So I brought him the tshuvas maram shik, but the maram shik insists that it has to be a fleshy dinner. So he says, he'll look at it after the wedding. He doesn't understand. So we didn't understand why. Then we found out later. He was the youth director in that shul, and he felt obligated he had to have the wedding there, and he didn't trust the hashgacha on the fleshy. And the milchik, he did trust it. So that's why he wanted to have a milchik wedding. But really, it's not right. More correct is that all the Sheva brachas, even the sudas in the middle of the week, the Sheva brachas should really be fleshy. There's even a discussion whether it has to be meat or chicken is acceptable. So some of the Achrayim recommend a quote from the Gerer Rebbe before the Second World War that he recommended even if you can't afford meat is much more expensive than chicken. So the girl's parents or the parents, both parents may not be prepared to pay so much money for the meal. So the Gerer Rebbe recommended at least he should have a minion of 10 people should eat basar behema and you have the others eat chicken. You should really have basar v'yayin. You should really have basar. And the more important is the yayin. The yayin is a suda shel simcha. Really, yayin is the important thing. If you have milchiks, maybe you can be makel, but the ikar is the yayin. And with machmer, even you should have basar, and maybe even basar behema as opposed to basar roif. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to have the Gemara has a minig in the end of Perkeskis Habatim, the last daf, that he put efer makle, ashes, on the chassan's forehead, the makam tefillin, where he puts the shal rosh. So many have the practice that they put the ashes before the chassan watches down to the yard. So actually, had the practice. He insisted on putting it on after all the brachas were all over. He said he's not a chassan before. He used to insist that he's not a chassan before. Different minhagim. All the minhagim are wonderful. Each one should follow his own minhagim. I remember when I got married, so my father-in-law had different minhagim, and our family had different minhagim. My father-in-law wanted to have all of his minhagim. So I got married on a Tuesday night, I remember. So I came to shiur that Tuesday morning. So yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik, if the girl is marrying me, so she takes on my minhagim, so why do I have to do the minhagim of my father-in-law? Maybe I should insist. So he said, Herschel, what does it bother you? All the minhagim are for the purpose of batchanes. Everybody should get a good laugh. They should have a good time. So let them have their batchanes. Let them have a good time. Let them do whatever they want. Sure. Okay, good. I wish everybody hatzlocha. Those who are married should be happily married. Those who are single should find the right shiduchim. See? One easy lesson. How to get married.
Why is the owner of Gomorrah possible?
We're afraid he's going to be Mishael.